Welcome to What's Ailing the World. On this show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, who have created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth, where doctors create disease and destroy life and administer biological weapons, nicknamed vaccines, which are corrupting our very genetic structure, where police and the judicial system protect the criminals and persecute the innocent, where governments have become terrorists against the people they purport to serve and commit treason every day by allowing the destruction of our air, water, food, and planet, who suppress the natural solutions to all these problems already available, who are stealing and torturing our children under the guise of child protection. The ability to see the big picture is a critical skill necessary to formulate the solutions we need to bring these predators down. The critical first step for everyone with a conscience is to do your own research, as we have been lied to about everything. The study of language is very revealing. The word lie was put in the middle of the word belief, as when the psychopaths are able to lead the slave work units to believe a lie, it becomes their truth. I strongly recommend that you challenge all of your own beliefs until you know the truth. This is not easy, as I discovered when I had to face the fact that the medical profession I had so proudly joined was totally corrupted to do the opposite of the Hippocratic oath taken, to first do no harm. My websites are reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com and drcarly.com. On both of these websites, you can access the diagrams that I came up with in 1999. The first diagram is the big picture, and there are links to the lecture I gave in Chicago in 2008 where I'm explaining those diagrams on both sites. It's probably easier to find them on the reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com site under the vids tab. I have actually offered a $10,000 reward on my drcarly.com site 6 years ago for any white coat to refute any of my information on the air, and of course to this day I have received no takers to this challenge. Thanks to the persecution I encountered due to my work, including the abduction and ongoing state-sanctioned torture of my only son, I was forced to face the truth that all the problems we are being exposed to are being caused intentionally. And the solutions that have been developed by people of conscience who step out of the boxes created when one becomes a licensed professional in any field are being suppressed. Facing that reality that the psychopaths which control our world have created a hell on earth intentionally is a critical step in bringing forth an anti-hell. Overstanding the simplicity of the master template of how this hell has been created makes the antidote equally simple. We don't need all the details. What we need to do is to say no to our predators, to stop loving them, forgiving them, making excuses for them, and to stop funding our own destruction, and of course to stand up to them. And my guest today is one of my heroes, and who is really taking the lead in doing exactly that. Because it's not just the truth that will set us free, of course, it's taking action. We have to take action, because negotiation and compromise with psychopaths is impossible. If you think my work is important, please tell others about this show. You can support this work by donating on the PayPal buttons on either of my sites. You can help friends or family who are too ill to face reality by getting a consult for them from me. Of course, I do not practice medicine. I do not give medical advice. After the medical mafia went after my medical license for speaking the truth, instead, I am a teacher now, and I teach people what I would do if I was they to reverse their diseases with natural therapies. To learn how I do consults, click on the services tab on my reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com site. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarly@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week. I also have a toll-free number, 888-321-6751. On which you can contact me from anywhere in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean. If you get a strange message that the number's been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you, because I'm getting amazing interference on many levels for some strange reason. My Skype username is drcarly1, but I prefer to use Skype primarily for my international clients and radio shows, so if you have access to me through one of those other numbers, please use those numbers instead. Archives of my shows for the past few years on various networks can be found at thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on Dr. Carley Archives. If you have questions or comments during the show, you can call in at 0208-144-3781. You can also Skype the producers at TCT-calls, all lowercase, TCT-CALLS. Very important. Callers need to mute their phones while waiting to be brought on so as not to cause interference with whoever's speaking. And please wait till the second hour to call in so I have an opportunity to introduce the topic of the week. One of the most important things you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones from the organisms being created by the mad scientists at the over 1,300 biowarfare labs in the U.S. alone is purchase a silver lungs colloidal silver generator. If you go to the link section of reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com, you can learn about the generator that I use and recommend. And my pets, my three dogs and two cats, also take the silver every day. And it is one of the most important ways you can protect yourself from the viruses that the vaccinees are coughing and sneezing on you, as well as whatever's being dumped on us in the chemtrails, including now live rabies virus. Of course, they're doing that, claiming that they're vaccinating the little raccoons out in nature. But in fact, this is live rabies, and they're actually causing today disease. Okay, the answer to our question, what's ailing the world today, is lack of action against the psychopaths. And my special guest today is J.B. Campbell. I strongly suggest that you go to his blog. It's J.B. Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L, extremismonline.com. He's got a number of excellent essays that he's written. And let me just tell you a little bit about him. He was born in Chicago in 1946. Grew up in Oak Brook, Illinois, then the polo capital of the world. Graduated from Carmel High School in California, raced cars in Australia and England for 2 years. He had 3 years of college, mostly at the University of Nevada in Reno. He operated the School of Slide Control to train racing drivers and others the technique of slide control. He was a commercial oil field diver in Texas and Louisiana for 2 years. And most interestingly, was in the British South Africa Police in Rhodesia in the early 70s and was a section officer in the support unit, an anti-terrorist group. He was the first American in this organization since 1923. He started the modern militia movement in 1989 with his book, The New American Man, A Call to Arms. The militia movement lasted until 1995 with the state-sponsored destruction of the OKC federal building. The State Department considers him a mercenary. The FBI considers him a problem. The Secret Service considers him a terrorist, and he couldn't care less, which I love that. He makes a living as a drilling supervisor, mainly in Southern California. And he is married to Dr. Robbie Sky Campbell, who was a guest on my show a couple of weeks ago, and told all of you about how she learned about the corruption and fraud in medicine as well, and no longer practices traditional medicine. It is truly amazing how many doctors who are trying to do the right thing are being persecuted. So it's really amazing that these two have come together, and they're doing some amazing things. And I always tell people on my show to watch the movie V for Vendetta to uplift them, to make them realize what can be done when people join together to face the psychopaths that are trying to destroy us. And here I have found V. And I don't know if he likes me saying that, but that's the way I look at you, Bruce. So thank you so much for joining us on the show. And I had sent you an email some days ago in regards to my frustration about these two groups of people that we have, you know, the people of conscience, as I call them, that are always trying to find a way, you know, to forgive the psychopaths. And, you know, they believe that somehow they can, you know, cause them to, you know, repent and stop killing us and maiming us and stealing everything we have, including our children. And then, of course, we have the psychopaths, which they don't have a conscience. I mean, that's why they are predators. So if we could start there, I just wanted to ask you if you've thought of anything along those lines as to how we can wake people up, especially these Christians, you know, these Christians that are always, you know, thinking, well, God's going to take care of us and God's in control. Well, if God's in control, I say we got a real problem because things aren't looking too good. So take it away.
Well, that's our basic problem, as I see it, as Americans. We've got this Christian mind control. I mean, all religion is mind control.
I agree.
So whether it's based on the Judeo-Christian paradigm or whatever you want to call it, the matrix that they've created. You've mentioned that people cannot deal with this psychopathology that's confronting us. It's because of the Christian model. I mean, Jesus surrendered to be horribly tortured and murdered.
Exactly.
And this is held to be perfection. So it's a hard one to deal with, and I can only say that Christianity has to be totally rejected. Otherwise, we're going to die if we remain Christian. I mean, Christianity is the license for Judaism to run wild, because we're prohibited as Christians. I mean, I'm not a Christian, but I mean, as Christians, we are prohibited to resist evil. We're not even allowed to discuss it. So it's the perfect license for Jews to go crazy, which they've been doing from the very beginning, and continue.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did a show on these Zionist predators with Deanna Spingola a week or two ago, which she revealed her amazing knowledge of history. I mean, going back as far as you can even research, this same crap has been going on. And when you overstand, you actually have to admit it's kind of genius, this plan they've come up with, where they're basically telling people, oh, turn the other cheek. Let them slap your other cheek. You know, don't raise your hand. Don't do a darn thing. Just let them keep doing whatever they want to do. And, you know, offer your suffering up to God. You know, yeah, that's a good plan. Let them do whatever they want to do. Let you suffer to all kinds of horrific extents. But don't do anything about it. Just offer the suffering up to God. I mean, this is so insane. It just boggles my mind. And, you know, this is the hardest thing, in my opinion, to deal with. In fact, now you have, like you said, the Judeo-Christian. You know, somehow they've brought the two together, and the Christians have been made to believe that, you know, the Jews are the chosen people. And I'd like to know who really chose them, because they are, in large majority, the psychopaths that are causing all this damage. But, you know, for that reason, here where I live in North Carolina, I would say half the churches, the Christian churches, have the name Zion in them. I mean, it just makes me sick as I'm driving around and seeing this. And, of course, they're having vaccine clinics in these churches, and all kinds of strange things are happening. So I totally agree with you that this is one of our major problems. It's what's keeping people on the couch doing nothing. And, in fact, we must stand up for ourselves. I mean, it's called protecting your own. You know, where did we lose our right to protect our own families? How did that happen?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I mean, you say who chose them. The Jews chose themselves. The Jews consider themselves to be God. So that's a
yes.
Problem right there. I'll tell you a story. What happened to me in Africa when I got into support unit was this anti-terrorist squad. Had about 300 Africans with about 40 white guys over them. And we spend up 6 weeks out in the bush, you know, hunting terrorists. And then get a week off and then a week back in headquarters to retrain and then back in the bush for 6 weeks. So at one point my boss said to me, Ms. Pat Deasy, said, Campbell, You're an American, and there's some American missionaries in Chesa Tribal Trust Land where you're going to be going in the next your next tour. I want you to go see them because they've been helping the terrorists. I said, you know, I'm not comfortable talking to these people. He said, well, I'm not giving you a choice. Your order is to go talk to these people and try to persuade them to stop helping the terrorists. Okay. So I went, it was near Mount Darwin, and I gathered up a South African friend of mine, Willem van der Merwe. I said, hey, Willem, would you come along with me? I've got to go talk to these American missionaries. He said, okay. So I had about six of my Africans, and Willem and I drove into this heavily infested terrorist tribal trust land where they've been operating quite heavily. So I finally found this mission, this American mission, and drove into the courtyard kind of thing, and some African ladies came out and greeted us, and finally a white woman came out, and she kind of frowned at us because, you know, we were military. I said, is the missionary here? She said, no, it's my husband. He's not here. Can I help you? Well, I said, well, come on inside. So she had us come in, and me and Willem had some tea. I said, well, ma'am, I've been asked to talk to you because, you know, we've caught terrorists with your hospital bracelet on their wrists. She said, well, it's our Christian duty to help everyone. Yeah, I understand that, but these people, though, they shouldn't be helped because they're murderers. Oh, no, we don't believe that. I said, I understand that. But you're in terrible danger. No, she said, they love us. I said, now, ma'am, you should know that in the whole of the African subcontinent below the Sahara, there is no word for love in any African lexicon. Well, they've learned to love through our Christian teachings. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, but if they're ordered to kill you, they will kill you. She said, no, it's not possible. I said, well, let me put it this way. If they're ordered to kill you and they don't kill you, they will be killed, and then somebody who doesn't love you will come here and kill you. She said, no, you're wrong. Okay. I said, I had to do this. I was ordered to talk with you. I've done it. We must leave. And we did. But about 6 weeks later, the mission was attacked by terrorists and wiped out. All the missionaries were killed. So I suppose you could say it was deserved, but it's just a symptom of Christianity. It was one of the eye-openers for me, just how self-destructive Christianity truly is.
Well, and when you think about it, I mean, I would like you to explain who these quote-unquote terrorists were, because these were actual terrorists. I mean, the word terrorist has been corrupted, you know, in this day and age as well, because now the ones who are calling others terrorists are actually the terrorists. But the idea that they would knowingly save people who are raping and killing people so that they can go out and continue to do it, I mean, that is the definition of insanity. And certainly, you know, I would like to have been a fly on the wall as this woman was being killed. I guess she must have said, I should have listened. Of course, it was too late at that point, but who were the ones that you were up against who were causing this mayhem back in the day?
Well, we had two terrorist gangs or organizations, one led by Robert Mugabe, who's today the prime minister, and the other by Joshua Nkomo. Mugabe's terrorists were mainly from the Shona tribe up north, and they were supported by the Chinese. And Nkomo's gang was supported by the Soviets. So I mainly dealt with the Chinese-backed terrorists, and they were the most sadistic bastards I've ever encountered. I mean, unbelievable cruelty that they practice on their own people, let alone on any unfortunate whites that they got their hands on. They were, for an example, I mean, any African who was accused by them of helping us, and very few of them actually did, but the terrorist gangs would come into a kraal, you know, a little collection of huts, and ask, who's the head man here? And the guy would come forward, I'm head man. And this idiot would fish a piece of paper out of his shirt pocket and say, oh, yes, you've been helping the police reserve. Oh, no, no, I haven't. He probably hadn't. But typically he would have his legs chopped off on the spot, and his wife would have to cook and eat his lips, his nose, his ears, and his dick. They would cut all these things off the poor man and make the wife cook them and eat them. So this is the kind of thing we were up against, and of course the poor Africans were up against. It was just unspeakable sadism. So this is who the American government wanted to be in charge of Rhodesia, and they put the leader of this bunch of people into power under Robert Mugabe.
And obviously, I'm sure that one of the main reasons for what was going on back then is the same reason as now, to kill off as much of the population as possible so they can steal all their natural resources, because certainly Africa's got to be one of the biggest gems in the world in terms of just untold natural resources that have yet to be, you know, stolen by these, you know, psychopathic regimes. So I'm sure, is it not true that that was one of their reasons for doing what they were doing?
Absolutely. I mean, Rhodesia had, and Zimbabwe still has, the greatest chromium ore deposits in the world. And as soon as the whites were finally persuaded to leave by the treacherous Ian Smith, and the blacks took over under Mugabe, David Rockefeller flew into, it used to be called Salisbury, now it's called Harare, and met with Mugabe and his people to take over the chromium mining. So, I mean, it was all about, I mean, chrome and nickel and gold and diamonds and you name it. I mean, Rhodesia is very rich in it, almost as rich as South Africa in proportion. So that was what it was all about. It was this stealing of the raw materials. And the whole thing is, we find out now that the Jews who run everything, they don't want white men in charge of any raw materials. This is a major policy. White men must not be in charge of raw materials. It must be in the hands of non-whites, who are much more easily deceived and tricked by these arbitragers and entrepreneurs and international tricksters. They don't like to do business, you know, in competitive business with white men. They want to have this bribable native population in Africa so they can pay them off and get all the raw materials for very cheap.
And what was the end point of your mission there? Did you just eventually say, I can't take this anymore? I mean, it's a trauma of massive proportions just to have to watch the sadism that you describe. I can't even imagine. It's like living a horror film. But was there some point where the mission was declared, you know, not able to be accomplished? Or did you just say, I'm not going to do this anymore?
Well, in January of 1974, I was ordered to go down to a secret prison camp on the Mozambique border called Villa Salazar. And here the police, I was a member of the police, even though I was not a policeman, I was in support unit, an anti-terrorist unit. But it was our mission, I found out, to spend 6 weeks, you know, six weeks at this prison camp where Joshua Nkomo and his merry men, about 45 members of ZAPU, Zimbabwe African People's Union, that was the Soviet-backed gang, They were in detention and had been for about 9 years when I got there. And they were held in quite luxurious accommodations with, you know, full mail and full family visits. And they get on a train once a month and go into Bulawayo and visit their old buddies. So it was kind of a strange situation. And I'd heard of Joshua Nkomo, and of course he was a notorious figure in the early days of the uprising in the 60s. But he disappeared, and he disappeared into detention. So I thought, well, this is interesting. And then the member in charge of the police camp there took me on a little tour, and he showed me how these guys were brought into the classroom and trained in civics, how to run a government, all kinds of civil matters. And I about fainted. I said, Tony, these guys are being groomed for leadership. He said, well, I suppose you could say that. I said, my God, this is a sellout. They're going to be turned. They're going to have the government. Well, he said, I don't know about that. I said, well, why are you training them in how to run a government? They're supposed to be hanged for terrorism. So that was the beginning of my disillusionment. I was never so happy as to be in Rhodesia fighting these guys until this experience. And then a few months later, I was up in on my regular anti-terrorist duties, and the Prime Minister, Ian Smith, declared a ceasefire for a week, or I don't know, about a month it lasted. And we were not allowed to go out into the bush and fight these guys. They were allowed to pour into the country from their training camps in Zambia, Mozambique. And I thought, okay, that's it. I'm going to get killed for nothing. Mm-hmm. And I bought out my contract within a short period of time. That was I'm not going to sacrifice myself for a sellout, which is exactly what happened a few years later. But I warned everybody. I said, they're grooming Joshua Nkomo, and I never heard of Robert Mugabe. I never heard of Mugabe until, you know, years later. I didn't know who he was. But he was getting the exact same treatment at Salisbury Prison. He was being groomed for leadership as well by these treacherous whites running the Rhodesian government. And the farmers, the people of Rhodesia, were never told about this until Ian Smith all of a sudden said in some church, said, well, it's time to recognize that majority rule must come to Rhodesia.
And right. So right. Now that we've found the psychopaths amongst them and we've trained them, now we'll let them take over because that will look good, basically.
Exactly. And Henry Kissinger ordered Smith to release Nkomo and Mugabe, and that's how it happened. They were groomed for leadership for probably a dozen years or more, 15 years, and then everything was turned over to them.
And let me just say, because I always talk about overstanding the big picture, because this experience for you was the same experience that I went through in medical school residency, and then once I started working as an attending in the ER at the busiest trauma center in the United States, I saw that the doctors who had no problem doing the wrong thing, those were the ones who were always promoted amongst the ranks. And it took me a long time before I found out about the medical masons. They're actually called anti-Hippocratics. But this goes true for all areas of our world, that basically the psychopaths who are at the top of the food chain, and certainly Henry Kissinger is definitely one of them, they find the people within whatever profession, whatever religion, whatever. And the psychopaths are the ones that they will tap to, to basically bribe them, because since they're psychopaths, you know, they have no conscience and they'll do anything for cash. But they find a way to put them in power, and then they control their little area. And that's why we're in the position that we're now in, because psychopaths now control everything.
Absolutely. The psychos are the only ones they trust to do the right thing for them.
Right.
You know, people with conscience cannot be trusted. Some people such as yourself in the medical profession, my wife, They can't be trusted to follow orders if they don't make moral sense.
Exactly. So please tell us a little bit about your experience in. I'm sure this had a lot to do with you starting the modern militia movement in 1989 with your book, The New American Man, A Call to Arms. And just the title of that book gives me the chills. First of all, the men are being so demasculated in many ways, distracted with sports, feminized with all kinds of synthetic estrogens. They're no longer protectors even of their own families. And a very good example of that just occurred here in the States this past week. A man with an autistic child was getting reports from the school where his child went that the child was being violent in school and acting out and all these things, and the child was not that way at home, so he smelled the rat and he wired his son up and sent him to school, and then the son came home with 6.5 hours of audio tape of the teachers torturing this child, calling him a bastard and doing all kinds of like psychological torture on this young man. And what did the father do? He went on YouTube and demanded a public apology. He did not take the child out of school. I mean, that blew my mind. It's like, okay, now I got you, but all I want you to do is apologize to my child. They say that they've gotten the people involved out of the classroom, but obviously if this kind of thing is going on, it's basically a school policy. So how can you think that just getting rid of one or two participants in this one particular room is going to change anything? He did not even take his child out of the school. That is not being a protector. And that's where I'm so flustered, because the men are supposed to be the protectors, and they're not protecting even their own families.
Yeah, that was the basis for me starting that thing back then. I mean, it started actually when I was in college in the 60s at University of Nevada. And we had this this professor in political science class, and he started talking about the Second Amendment, and some student raised his hand and said, "Sir, doesn't the Second Amendment guarantee the right of the people to keep and bear arms?" She said, "No, well, wait a minute." He said, "Now, wait a minute. If you read the Second Amendment, you'll see that it says that." A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So he said the well-regulated militia is the National Guard. Now, the National Guard has guns down at the armory, so that's all you need. And, of course, in those days, 1968, I wasn't ready to deal with that specious kind of argument, but it gnawed on me for years. So that, with this feminization of men, American men, I thought, you know, I'm going to start something here. I mean, I got in the jam for trying to kill David Rockefeller in 1980. I got caught and prosecuted and nearly went to prison, luckily by the greatest fluke and police carelessness. I beat it on a technicality. I thought, you know, I gotta do something smarter here. I need a gang. I need some guys to help me with this overthrowing this invisible government. So, got Joseph Crowley, this professor at the University of Nevada, who I attacked him and made quite a stir on campus, and this obscure person was made president for life of the University of Nevada. Because of the way I attacked him in public, they wanted to.
And when you say attacked him, you mean you attacked him verbally. You asked him hard questions he couldn't answer, correct?
Yeah, on radio and television shows in Reno. And I blew everybody's mind in Reno because they thought University of Nevada was a concerned place. Because it was Nevada. They didn't realize that all these professors came up from Berkeley and Stanford and UCLA to teach, and they were all a bunch of communists. So quite a shock for the people of Reno for my revelations on television and radio and in the newspaper. And because Crowley was so embarrassed by my revelations. He'd been I'd infiltrated the Students for a Democratic Society, became a secretary just to satisfy myself what it was all about. And I blew their whole agenda publicly in Reno. Crowley was our faculty advisor. He was a communist. So, word him for the embarrassment, they made him president for life of the University of Nevada. And stayed there until he retired.
Are you still there?
I'm here. Hello?
Okay, I guess I thought we lost you, but I guess we lost me. They just brought me back on. Okay. So, please continue.
All right, so anyway, that experience plus this, as you say, the feminization, and man, I thought, I've got to do something about this. So I researched the with this realization that the Second Amendment is a gigantic fraud. This opening clause about the well-regulated militia. There's no such thing as a well-regulated militia.
One of the biggest frustrations we have is that the men who are supposed to be protectors, and I'm talking about even the men in the military who take an oath to protect us from terrorists from within, and yet when they go into the service, there has to be a time where they all realize, uh-oh, you know, this whole war is a fraud. I'm protecting the poppy growers in Afghanistan, et cetera, et cetera. And yet they do nothing because the head of the military at the highest level are psychopaths as well. But what you were talking about, the militia, the well-regulated militia, and I've heard this even in this day and age, they're saying how, yeah, they're talking about the National Guard. Well, the National Guard is under the state and federal governments anyway. So why would they specifically, bring them out of the loop in terms of the military? You know, it's all a scam. But then we find out the whole Constitution is a scam because, in fact, I have many court citations at state and even up to the Supreme Court level where when people claim they have a constitutional right, they're basically told you weren't a party to the Constitution. So the whole thing is a fraud, and that's why the courts will never be a solution because, you know, they'll let a few people win just to make it look good. But in reality, only the signers and their families, the bloodline psychopaths, are parties to the Constitution. But take it away.
Yeah, well, the Constitution, of course, is the engine of our destruction, as I've written many times. Before that, we had the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union, which did not provide for a president or a Supreme Court. All we had was the Congress. Well, the bankers wanted a privately owned central bank. But you can't have such a thing without a central government. And so they foisted this fraud on us called the Constitution, which is the blueprint for the central government. And that is the power behind the banks. Anyway, the Bill of Rights is what people get confused. They say, well, it's constitutional rights, it's a constitution. No, it's not. It's the Bill of Rights that it was put in by some guys to protect us from the Constitution. They are antithetical. They are in conflict. The Constitution is just 7 parts program for running a central government. So the Bill of Rights was added to protect from this monstrous concept. Anyway, so I learned all these things as I was researching the militia. I said, what is the militia? You know, that's a funny word. It sounds very American to me. The militia. Okay, well, it turns out it was all white men between 18 and 45 or something like that. And it was just a totally unregulated thing, which the central planners hated from the very beginning. And so they of the Second Amendment, which people think, oh, boy, it's a wonderful guarantee. And it's nothing. It is nothing because the judges, ever since 1840, when they started litigating this stuff, according to the research I did on the U.S. Code annotated, the judges would say, I don't see what connection the sawed-off shotgun has to a well-regulated militia. So you should go to prison. Or this pistol. There's no pistol in the militia. No, they just use this against us. So these things started to gnaw on me, and I thought, okay, well, I'm going to jam this militia right down the throat of this government. I'm going to create what I want it to be. And all I was doing was, you know, getting a lot of guns and ammo sold because there wasn't any education being done as I was starting this militia. I was just saying, hey, let's start the militia up again. And people said, yeah, that sounds great. It sounded kind of militaristic and, you know, paramilitary or whatever, and manly. And I did say, well, you know, there are only men in the militia, no women. It's all men between certain ages. So we can forget the age limit. We'll have whatever age limit we want. You're a man, if you're not the vice president, you're not in the military, then you're expected to be in the militia. And this struck a nerve. It really took off. It exploded virtually overnight. In 1989, when I started on a radio station up in Anchorage, it just exploded. And within a couple of years, there were, you know, several million guys saying, I'm in the militia. They didn't know really what it meant. And I was just trying to start an armed revolutionary movement with this old word, which I really didn't care for that much, because the more I looked into the militia, the more I'd seen it had been used for bad purposes, you know, by George Washington after he became president, put down the Whiskey Rebellion with it, and all kinds of other things. But I thought, that doesn't matter. I'm gonna jam it down the throat of the judges and the government. And I did. And there was no way to stop it. The Clintons did everything they could to stop it. The more they did, the bigger it got. And so they had to come up with a way to create scorn and revulsion. And they did with Oklahoma City. They blew up the building, killed a bunch of children, and blamed it on the militia. Timothy McVeigh, of course, was with the U.S. Army, Special Forces, Covert Tactical Unit. And he was pretending to be a racist militia member. He was a spy. He was an Army spy. That's all. So, CIA spy. And that's how they wrecked it. And it became a dirty word virtually overnight. So, I don't want to use militia anymore. It's got to be just the resistance, you know, small r. We got to start the resistance now. Forget it's going to be men and women, everything. Everybody's got to be involved in this resistance movement. Forget the militia. It was a non-event. It was just kind of a stunt. It didn't accomplish anything except sell a lot of guns and ammo. But it was a beginning, and it scared the government. They didn't have any inclination, any clue that this was going to happen. It came out of left field. They didn't know what to do about it. The more they tried to stop it, the bigger it got. So now I'm going to try something else, and that's going to be this resistance movement.
And how is that going?
Well, I think there's a natural resistance. The more people see what is happening, I just am trying to make it more militant, because I'm saying, and I'm probably the only one right now that I know of, saying that all of these government people that are suppressing us and repressing us, they have to be killed. There's no getting around it. And before, I was on about the Council on Foreign Relations and the Jewish organizations, but now, you know, it's got to be anybody, military, police, feds, whatever. Anybody who is participating in our repression has to be killed. There's no other way. We're on the last stages of the civilization. If we want to get it back, we're going to have to kill a lot of very nasty people with no, you know, very sadistic people. As sadistic as the people I was fighting in Africa, they're no different. They participate in renditions, kidnappings, torture, murder, theft. Now the IRS is saying that they're going to take away our passports and our guns if we owe them more than $50,000. Well, we don't owe them a damn dime. But they can say we owe as much as they want. And they'll use that to take away our basic rights to defend ourselves. So I say, fine, bring it on, boy. Because we got a lot more guns than the IRS has. We have a lot more guns than the U.S. Army has. We got the guns. Do we have the will to use them? Well, that's what my mission is to impart this will again. I kind of started it with the militia, and it faded out with one huge atrocity committed in our name. Well, I think we're more sophisticated than that now, and we're not going to fall for this type of brainwashing that they used on us in 1995. We're a little older now, a little more experienced.
Well, not only that, but thanks to the Internet, I just watched an excellent YouTube presentation yesterday made by an Arab individual in regards to the false flag that occurred in London in 2005 on 7/7, where there were four different bombings that took place, and the evidence that he brings forward to prove that this is a false flag, that the Mossad and MI5 were obviously the perpetrators behind it. And as it turns out, when you actually investigate, all of these different things that are happening, and of course 9/11 is at the top of the list, it becomes obvious who actually pulled it off. And yet all of the time this is used as an excuse to put cameras everywhere, you know, to take away more and more rights as time goes on. In my opinion, anybody that can't see this at this point is actually pretty much brain dead. And I understand why, you know, they're being vaccine damaged and fluoridated and aspartamed, and their brains are being destroyed with heavy metals, all kinds of things. Bruce, yeah, we'll just keep on going, because listeners, the interference just shows you that this information is not appreciated by the psychopaths. But in fact, and I just want to say, I'm a very peaceful person, but I can tell you right now that if the SWAT team comes to my door and tries to break in my house to take me off to a FEMA camp, I'm going to do what I have to do, because that is not going to happen. And I have, you know, developed into having that, you know, mentality, because I have to agree with Bruce. We cannot do anything else but vaporize these monsters. How else are we going to ever change things? And as you had written in one of your essays, Bruce, of course, the idea of taking them into custody and putting them into some kind of a camp, or what's the point? Are we going to, you know, change them? Are we going to give them, you know, a due process or whatever? That's not going to work. The psychopaths must be destroyed. That is our only way out of this hell.
Yeah, the Germans discovered this during the war. You know, they captured a lot of Russian soldiers, and they put them in prison camps. But there was this other element called the commissars, all mainly Jews, who would shoot Russian soldiers who didn't show sufficient zeal in their fighting. They just shoot them from behind. Well, these people, the Germans, realized you can't rehabilitate this type of mentality. You can only put them up against a wall and shoot them. Some people are so twisted and so homicidal that you have to eradicate them immediately, and you don't hang on to them and feed them, or you know, try to talk to them. It doesn't do any good. They're fanatics.
Well, and let me just say, to help some people that may be shocked and offended by what you're saying and what I'm agreeing with, think of these individuals as parasites. If you've got some gigantic tapeworm sucking all the nutrients out of your body, are you going to try to capture that tapeworm and save it and unleash it so that it can, you know, make billions more tapeworms infect more people, or are you going to do something to kill it and get rid of it? I mean, these people are parasites. They're not only are they sucking off everything we have, but they enjoy it. That's what's really sick. There's a hormone called adrenochrome, which is oxidized epinephrine, which is released when any sentient being, be it human or animal, is tortured. The way that they're slaughtering cows now in those agri farms, where they're skinning them alive and things of this nature, and they're causing the creation of this hormone, adrenochrome. This is what they feed off. These people love that stuff. As they're sacrificing children, raping, sacrificing them, torturing them. This is what they feed off. This is the pathology that we're dealing with. This is an interesting development since last we spoke, because I know you were kind of honing in on the Council of Foreign Relations, which obviously is part of the big picture in terms of who's controlling the puppet strings. But I agree with you. I mean, there's individuals in all levels of government, military, police, that are going along with this program, because what's really sick is that apparently they believe that as long as they follow orders that they're going to be, you know, basically rewarded. Little do they realize their children are being made autistic and having all kinds of vaccine-induced diseases. They're being sprayed with chemtrails. I mean, it's not like they're being left out. They're being damaged as well, because evil is evil even to its own. But once they cross a certain line in the sand, obviously they can't be turned around, because I do know that once you give up your conscience, the party's over in terms of, you know, giving you back your humanity.
I don't think Americans realize how the Jews feel about them, us. Men are considered by the Jews to be the fascistic element of society, and as such need to be put in the military, where they will be subject to regulations and kept under control, their fascistic tendencies. I mean, this is a Jewish mindset. They feel threatened by men, and they need to keep them under control. So the best way to do it is to get them in the military, where if they step out of line, they can be court-martialed or punished in some way, put in prison. And the guys in the military are pretty much terrified of breaking the rules, because in the military, you know, you can be treated very harshly for breaking the rules, and that's the way the Jews want it. So these guys don't realize that they're just in there to be controlled and to kill on demand. So it's a whole different mindset that we have to acknowledge here.
Right. Well, and that's very well explained. Document Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which obviously is another Zionist creation. That is exactly their plan to actually use the military to try to convince young men, oh, you know, the women are going to want you because they're going to view you as a hero, blah, blah, blah. Well, in fact, they're nothing but cannon fodder. They're used for experimental purposes, especially with vaccinations. And I realized years ago, because I get calls from soldiers all the time, and they'll say to me, oh, I'm being ordered to take this vaccine and that vaccine. And, of course, Saddam didn't have any weapons of mass destruction. So eventually some of them start to ask themselves, why are you shooting me up with anthrax when, you know, there were no weapons of mass destruction? But yet these men who are supposed to be so brave, and that's why they went into the military to begin with, when in reality they probably went in because they couldn't get a job doing something else, but they're too afraid to refuse a vaccine. And, you know, it just blows my mind. I say to them, why don't you just say no? Well, I might be court-martialed. So what? Would you rather be court-martialed or dead? What are your options here? You know, you were foolish enough to sign up in the first place. I'm sure they didn't tell you that being inoculated with diseases was part of your mission. But, you know, it's just amazing that they are so mind-controlled. And I experienced this, and I'm sure your wife would agree, In medical residency training, especially when you become a surgeon, they use the same tactics: sleep deprivation, nutritional deprivation, you know, ordering you to do things which you say, oh, my God, I don't want to do this type thing. And they keep trying to bring you over lines in the sand to basically just turn you into a robot that they can use as at their whim.
Yeah, she told me about her experiences in residency and how brutal it is. And it's a, you know, a mind control experience.
Yes.
But, of course, her experience with the VA is, you know, because you have to do some work in the VA, showed her that these guys are just an experimental population. Mm-hmm. Now, these guys don't realize that they're only there to be controlled and to remove them as threats to the Jewish power structure. I mean, they don't, you know, it's hard for them to feature just how much they hate us. And fear us and want to keep us under control with these regulations. The best way is in the military.
And this is why they invented the term benefits. You know, I love it. Just like the elderly people are fighting for their right to have their Medicare benefits, when in fact it's the drugs that are killing them. It's even worse in the VA. In the VA, and I totally agree because I take the rotations in the VA as well. I saw the worst doctors ever. I mean, the doctors who can't get a job anyplace else, they go work in the VA. But what they're doing in the VA is they're continuing the experiments. And I actually was able to get a hold of some military medical records from one soldier, and it actually listed his exposures in Desert Storm is like different parts of an experiment. You know, there was the exposure to the vaccines, exposure to the burning oil wells. I mean, they actually listed them in that way. And then, of course, they go to the VA because that's a free benefit where the experiments continue and they kill you slowly. And that's one reason why now they're diagnosing so many of the military with post-traumatic stress disorder, because that's an excuse to make sure they don't have access to weapons when they get out. Because I realize that the soldiers who have post-traumatic stress disorder, what that tells me is these are men that have a conscience, and they know what they did, and they can't handle it. It's like just too ugly. The ones who don't have post-traumatic stress disorder are the psychopaths, the killers, who love to kill, and that's why they went into the military. So they're, of course, going to go after the ones who have a conscience to make sure that once they're out of the military and could perhaps join with you, that they are not able to access weapons.
Yeah, exactly. I had a friend who was a gunnery sergeant in the Marine Corps. He said, all my life, you know, he told me he took 11 mystery vaccinations. I'm a little nervous about that. I don't know what was in there. They wouldn't tell us what was in these 11 mystery shots. But anyway, he said, I always wanted to be in a war, and Desert Storm was my war, 1991. He said, I got over there, and all I saw were guys with their hands up coming at us, and all I did was jerk my thumb to the rears and keep going. But he said, I did see this event. He said, I hope the Marines didn't do this, because he's, you know, chauvinistic about his bunch of killers. But he said the Army had these Iraqis in a ditch, and they just put them in the ditch and machine gunned them down in there. So he said he saw a lot of terrible atrocities. My horseshoer one time in Oregon, first time I met him, he was working on a horse, and I said, you know, this Tim McVeigh, you know, he got his Bronze Star. He said, how's that? Well, I said, the Army had these Bradley vehicles, and they go along these trenches, and all these thousands of Iraqis were in the trenches trying to surrender, and the Bradley in the lead with a mine plow on the front would just go alongside the trench and bury these guys alive. And it was on television, and McVeigh was in one of the Bradleys behind the 50 caliber machine gun. If anybody tried to get out of the trench before he got buried alive, McVeigh would shoot him back into the trench. So he kind of straightened up from working on my horse and said, yeah, I was in the unit next to McVeigh's. I was doing that, too. I said, really? Well, I said, you know, buddy, that's a war crime, burying alive surrendering soldiers. Well, he said, I have to agree with my commander that, you know, these people had several months to surrender. I said, who the hell are you? You invaded their country. What do you mean they had several months to surrender to you? Who the hell are you? What right did you have to go to their country and kill them? What did they ever do to us? That was the last time you ever worked on one of my horses.
It's exactly, especially now that it's self-evident. You know, it blows my mind. We know that the wars were a fraud to begin with. Has Bush been charged with war crimes? Either Bush, no. Have they been made to lose any of their personal wealth as they've brought our country into a hole of debt that we will never get out of until the Federal Reserve is destroyed? Because, of course, this whole debt thing is a scam to begin with. But how can these people not see it? And I ask that knowing how they can't see it, because they're mind controlled. And it's just amazing to me. You know, I left medicine because I saw such atrocities and I just couldn't be part of it anymore. But the idea of putting people in a ditch and burying them alive, being ordered to do so, people that surrendered, people that were basically trying to defend their homeland, as you said, you know, what can these people possibly be thinking? And then they get a Bronze Star or a Purple Heart or whatever the case may be. It's just amazing to me, the mentality of these people.
Well, this is our mission, is to change this. I don't know if you can change the guys who believe in what they did, but as you say, the guys with PTSD, there's hope for them. They do have a conscience.
Do you do any speaking engagements to these? Because I know that you're busy. You have to go on out of town for your work and everything. But are you able to do any speaking engagements to these individuals to try to wake them up?
No, I don't speak in public except on shows such as this. It's a high risk deal. I'm trying to overthrow the United States government, and I'm trying to get a lot of people to rise up and kill our oppressors. So it's a high risk deal,
right?
And I don't want to be out in public that much.
Right, and I just want to say I totally relate to that. Because obviously you have no fear or you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. But there's a point where you say, look, I'm not going to be stupid, you know. It's the same thing with me. I'm constantly being asked to, you know, go here and there to do talks. As a matter of fact, a couple months ago I got an invitation from somebody in Israel, and I couldn't stop laughing. That really cracked me up. But there's no way in hell that I'm going to fly anywhere. As a matter of fact, I know if I leave where I live, which is where I have all my books and a lot of important documents, it'll be like a smoldering ash pile if I get back, if I return, because I'm sure that I'm on some list and, you know, I would be taken off the plane or put in a, you know, detention or whatever. And it's not that I have fear, but I have a mission, just like you, and I'm not going to be stupid about it.
I wouldn't dream of getting on an airplane. I mean, number one, you can't take guns with you. I'll go any place I can't take a gun. So these people that want to feel you up and abuse you in the airports, they're kind of degenerates in the first place, but I wouldn't ever submit to that type of treatment. So I drive everywhere. I drive all across the country for my work, and it's a lot of driving, but there's no way I would submit to these maniacs.
Right. Well, not to mention that your alternative is to go through the scanners, which actually unravel your DNA and cause cancer and things of that nature. So it's, you know, would you like to be, sexually abused or would you like to get cancer? I mean, those are your options. It's totally insane. But unfortunately, we have so many people that put up with it, and that's why we're in this position, because the slave work units, you know, who are constantly waving their flags and believing that their votes count. I mean, it's amazing to me that they still believe in the system, that they're going along with it. They're not saying no. I mean, if they don't want to, you know, stand up and be involved in taking out the predators, the very least they could do is say no to the predators.
Yeah, and I mean, just driving itself is no guarantee, you know, because now TSA is setting up roadblocks on the interstates. We've heard about that, and there's any excuse for a roadblock. So I must say that I'm prepared for any eventuality, because you cannot submit. We must never have this idea that we can submit to these guys. And once they get that picture in their heads, then, you know, we're going to have a little bit more breathing space. But we're at the beginning of this struggle now, the violent phase. We're at the end of the peaceful phase. That's about done. And now we're entering the violent phase. So we have to be up for this. We have to be ready and answer violence with violence. Even the threat of violence has to be immediate, just unhesitatingly.
Yes, actually, the last time you were on my show on my other network, we had discussed, and it's amazing how they've come up with certain slogans to further entrap people into lack of action. And one of my favorites is violence breeds violence. So that's something that they'll come up with to basically say, well, violence is not a solution. But, of course, their violence is not usually using weapons that we can see. They're using other weapons. They're using vaccinations. They're using chemtrails. They're using GMO food. They're using all kinds of other weapons to destroy our health and our minds. And so that is violence. It may not be using a gun, but I look upon, you know, vaccinations as an assault with a deadly weapon. So people have to get that, you know, that phrase, which was obviously created by these psychopaths, out of their minds, because they are being violent. They're just not using guns against us, at least for now. But we know what's coming.
Well, my experience in my life is that violence has been a tremendous answer to violence. It is an excellent response. It always works if you come, you know, with enough of it. Because anybody that's willing to use violence on you, or even threaten to use violence on you, has to be killed. I learned this in Africa, and I learned it in this country. There's just no alternative to answering the threat of violence or violence itself with counter-violence. It's called self-defense, and it's something these guys would like to eradicate from our minds, but this is our basic human right, is self-defense. Everybody is authorized to defend him or herself with as much violence as it needs to keep on living.
And it's the only thing that's going to wake these psychopaths that have been created, you know, to do their jobs, especially in the police force and things of that nature. It's the only thing that's going to make them sit up and take notice. I totally agree with that. I mean, when you think of an animal in the wild, you know, try to take a lion cub away from its mother and see what happens. But yet we have child predator services every day taking children away from families for bogus reasons so that they can use them for sex trafficking and child pornography and psychiatric drug experiments and things of that nature. People have lost that ability to protect themselves and their loved ones. And that's built into us. I have a very important book published by NATO, Life Sciences Division, called Biology of Aggression, where these psychopaths have actually studied this self-protective nature and tried to find ways to eradicate it. But yet, on the other hand, as occurred in Los Angeles 20 years ago with the Rodney King beating, they're also able to use frequencies to cause violence when they want to cause violence for their purposes so that they can crack down and things of that nature. And that's what people have to realize. Everything that's happening is like one big lab experiment. They're doing all these things on purpose for their purposes in order to create an agenda, the old problem, reaction, solution, Hegelian dialect situation. And that's what they're doing. And I totally agree with you. And I, 20 years ago, I couldn't even conceive of me saying that I would condone violence. But I agree with you. It is the only solution. It is the only thing that's going to stop these predators. In fact, that's the reason that all the high-level psychopaths have their private security forces and their secret service and all the rest of it protecting them, because they know the people are waking up.
Yeah, I mean, violence is the answer for them if they're threatened. So it's the same with us. It's just that they're doing the threatening. So we have to be prepared to use violence against them and their agents. I was in Los Angeles for the riots in 1992. It was quite an educational experience. Oh, yeah. And, I mean, you know, they had machine guns and everything in the neighborhood ready for these guys. And they approached, but then they went away. So that was a George Bush operation. All those 6,000 fires, not a one was put out, because these guys were using accelerants, very sophisticated fire starters. And, you know, the buildings in Los Angeles that were burned, a lot of them were brand new and had very sophisticated fire prevention, but not a single building was saved. That's how radical that was. It was all done by Bush's CIA Latinos. They were the ones with the walkie-talkies that were coordinating. And, the black people, they were just kind of opportunistic, but they weren't starting the fires. It was the CIA that was starting that whole thing. And they were trying to create a national emergency and martial law. It didn't work out for them. But totally contrived by the CIA.
Right, and it's really amazing to me, because just today in my local paper here in Charlotte, North Carolina, they had a huge article about Rodney King. They're bringing him out of the ash pile now to further foment this, you know, black versus white, you know, the divide and conquer thing. That's what they promote the most, in my opinion, after this Trayvon Martin shooting. You know, they're trying to get the racial thing going again. And
Lost you.
It's so obvious what they're doing, because if they could get all the people, and that's what I tell people, we're all slaves now. The blacks should know what that's like, because they lived it, and now just because they have a dark-skinned CIA spook in the presidency, just because of his skin, they're willing to stand with this man no matter what things he does. The last three executive orders he's written, the National Defense Authorization Act, basically we have no Bill of Rights anymore, and yet they're still promoting this man just because he has dark skin. So once again, it does go to show the sick genius of these monsters. You know, they use these things to their advantage. But if we could get all people to realize that we're all in the same boat, they're killing everything that matters. They're destroying our financial system, everything, on purpose. That's the only way that we're going to be able to wake people up in numbers that's going to make a difference, including all these agents that work for the CIA, like you said. You know, almost all the...
I've lost you.
Windows start being smashed and things of that nature. And it's actually been exposed in many places, especially protests that have occurred against the G8 meetings and things of that nature. It's basically the police that are doing it. You know, they wear their masks and everything, but a lot of times they've been videotaped and their identities have been uncovered. They're always the ones in those situations to try to get people to think protesting is bad. So stay home and take it.
Yeah. The most amazing... Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, the most amazing thing is these free speech zones, and now it's a felony, apparently, to protest anybody that has Secret Service protection. So I had the Secret Service visit me a couple of, I wrote something back in 92 when George Bush Sr. was still president, called Executive Action. And Bogue Wrights was one of my subscribers, so he sent it on to the FBI. Bogue Wrights is a terrible CIA assassin, as you know.
Yes.
But anyway, he sent it on to his buddies in the FBI, and they sent it to the Secret Service. So the Secret Service sent two Jews to my mother's house up in Carmel. I was living in Los Angeles. I guess they thought I lived in Carmel. So she called and said they were trying to talk to her, so I called her back. And just then, they were at the door. So this one came in. He said, I'm at the Monterey County Sheriff's Office. And he barged into the house. He said, I'm looking for John Bruce Campbell. Oh, she said, I'm talking to him on the phone right now. So he barged into the house and grabbed the phone and said, this is Howard Silverman with the Secret Service. I said, I thought you were with the Monterey County Sheriff's Office. Oh, he said, we always say that so we don't freak people out. Well, what do you want? Did you write something called Executive Action? No. Uh-huh. He said, I got the wrong John Bruce Campbell, huh? I said, put the phone down and get out of the house. So he said, I want to talk to you. I said, I don't want to talk to you. Go away. So he finally did that. She got it back on the phone. I said, don't talk to them. So this other one had my dossier. And he unraveled it and said, we're not a very nice person here. And she said, because I have a pretty good dossier. No moral turpitude, but a lot of gun charges and a lot of things, machine guns and all kinds of that stuff, which I've, never been convicted on. But nevertheless, they don't like me. She said, you go out to your car. And Silverman said, he can't, we're a pair. She said, you go with him. So that day, three Secret Service agents came to my place in Los Angeles. They traced the telephone call and showed up. They wanted to know about this thing I'd written. And, of course, I denied it for a while. And then finally, I said, do I need to get an attorney? Well, just tell us you wrote it, why you wrote it, and it will go away. Well, I said, because you work for a stone killer. I said, you ever hear of Operation Just Cause? What's that? Well, I said, your hero, Bush, killed 6,000 Panamanians and buried them in secret mass graves with army bulldozers. You ever hear of Operation Desert Storm? You know how many millions of people he's going to kill? He said, okay, but if we see you anywhere near the boss, we're going to kill you. I said, well, I mean, I never know when he's coming. I only know when he's leaving town. Mm-hmm. Don't ever be anywhere near him or we'll take you down. Whatever. So I've had some experience with the Secret Service, and now we see what a bunch of degenerates they really are. And as I said in my latest piece, I mean, all you need to know about the Secret Service is what happened in Dallas in 63 when the Secret Service driver, Bill Greer, brought the limousine to a virtual halt at the bottom of the hill so the shooters could get a good shot. He turned around and watched until the headshot was made, and then he gassed it. And Roy Kellerman, the head of the Secret Service detail, was sitting in the right seat. He just hunched down, because, I mean, like nine bullets were coming into that vehicle from all different directions. All he wanted to do was get the hell out of there, not get hit. His big job description is jumping on the person of the president or the first lady and protecting them with his life. Huh. He sat in that right seat and didn't move until and then he said, told Greer, gas it, go on, get out of here.
Yeah, so that's a Secret Service. Been done. Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's a Secret Service.
Well, and actually, when I heard about this prostitution scandal in Colombia, the first thing that I thought of is that the Secret Service obviously are the same ones who protect the psychopaths that have these after parties, as exposed in the Franklin cover-up, where they're bringing in children from places like Boys Town to rape and abuse them. Those are the same people that are protecting the ones doing those things. And so I guess in their minds they figure, you know, consorting with prostitutes, that's like nothing. So, you know, we're not going to have a problem with that because compared to our bosses, you know, we're pretty much doing really low-level stuff.
Yeah, George Bush and Karl Rove and Scott McClellan, they had like 80-some recorded visits from Gannon, you know, the male prostitute. And the Secret Service obviously had no problem letting him in.
Right. I know.
Bunch of queers. I mean, the whole thing, our whole government is run by homosexuals. This is the crazy thing. Bush, Obama, Bush Sr., Clinton has homosexual tendencies. I mean, the whole thing is a sexual playland. And these guys get into this thing for sex. Whatever kind of sex they like, that's what this is all about. They get their gratification from power and sex over helpless people.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a lack of morality, which is the main tendency of the psychopath in all areas. And it's just amazing to me. I mean, look how many presidents have been caught with their pants down. And, Newt Gingrich, you know, I love that guy. Not. A guy that divorced his wife as she's dying of cancer and was having affairs with a woman while he's promoting Clinton being impeached for doing the same thing. It's just hypocrisy of the highest order. And yet the people of this country, you know, having been divided and conquered with this Democrat-Republican thing, which is another scam, because basically they're all the New World Order agents who have agreed to go along with the program, but they put on their hats, Republican versus Democrat, and they start their fake, arguments, and people, you know, go along with it. It's ridiculous. There's so many, you know, areas in which this occurs. But like I always say, it's the big picture. When people can see what they're doing, then they have to take action. If they want to preserve the humanity, I mean, the vaccines, you know, that's one of my main things. They're corrupting our very DNA. It's called transhumanism, the creation of chimeras, injecting us with animal DNA, creating GMO food that's putting all kinds of foreign DNA into us as well. They are devolving the species. If that doesn't upset people, I don't know what will. And what are we going to do about it? And this is what we're being offered is called health care. You know, it's a joke. It's a joke.
Yeah. Well, now, on a slightly different subject, I don't know if you realize it, but the Jews tried to kill me 3 times back in 2003 in Las Vegas.
No, tell.
Yeah, well, I invented a vehicle years ago based on my experience in Rhodesia with landmines. And I don't know why I had a bulletproof car company in Monterey. It wasn't mine. I was the president of it. So I was familiar with this bulletproofing of vehicles, and at some point I got involved with the attempt to bulletproof one of these Bradley vehicles. But the Pentagon guy said, "Well, why don't you just invent something new instead of trying to modify an existing thing?" I said, "Well, long story short, I invented this thing called the Flea, forward light escort armored, and it." It's quite innovative, but it went nowhere, and for years nothing happened, and I went ahead and spent about $80,000 to create a rolling chassis, took a chance. It still went nowhere. So in 2000, I discovered humanitarian demining, and I thought, you know, there's something that I could get involved with. That's something I believe in. I'm not attacking anyone, and humanitarian demining, yeah, I'd like to do that. So this vehicle I invented would be ideal for this. So I went to a big symposium at the Monterey Naval Postgraduate School on humanitarian demining, and I made my invention known, and it got rave reviews. So long story short, unfortunately, humanitarian demining is run by the U.S. Army. So when they came to Las Vegas to look at this vehicle, they went crazy and said, oh, this is the secret to mine protection and IED protection. So they went ahead and agreed with Harry Reid. Harry Reid got behind it, and they were going to make this available. So the Israelis then attempted to kill me. Robbie, my wife, has had a lot of experience with Israelis and Jews in general, and she tried to warn me that there was a group of six or seven Israelis that were always at the swimming pool at our apartment complex. And she said, they're looking at you. You know, there's something wrong with those people. I would beware of them. I said, oh, I can't imagine what they would do. I mean, if somebody's going to kill me, you don't need six guys. You just need one. So I didn't understand the Israeli method in those days until the Abu Dhabi thing.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually my car, my truck and her car were vandalized. Out of like 1,000 vehicles in this huge apartment complex on Flamingo, just our two cars were vandalized. And the next day, I became very ill with and it turned out to be a kidney disease. And I also developed a terrible burn on my dick. So she was able to use antibiotics and natural methods and other things that she does. And it took about 6 weeks to cure me. And about this time, we were getting married. This is in 2003. We went over to Pebble Beach, California, and got married, but I was very, very sick still at that point. And after 6 weeks, she pulled me out of it. But then the Army was coming to look at this vehicle of ours, and my partner and I got in my truck, and my steering wheel was coated in grease. And I didn't realize, I mean, I put my hands in it not knowing that it was there, because my partner was talking. And I said, wait a minute, what the heck is this? So he didn't pay much attention, and I just wiped my hands in the steering wheel with the shop rag. We drove over to the vehicle. But the next day, again, I got very, very ill with the same symptoms. And unfortunately, I was permanently disfigured, severely disfigured from the burns. And eventually she pulled me out of the attempt of my life. It took another 6 weeks. Now, it happened one more time. I didn't put my hands in it, and we did report it to the Las Vegas police. But then when they said, who do you suspect? I said, well, apparently it's the Israelis, because she'd warned me about these guys. And I finally took her seriously. The first time I didn't say anything. You know, I couldn't believe anybody would try to poison me.
Mm-hmm.
But the second time I said, you know, I think I've been poisoned. She said, I think you're right. So the police wouldn't do a thing about it, and we finally got out of town, and the Israelis killed the vehicle program after the Army agreed to finance this thing, millions of dollars. They said that my criticism of Israel made it impossible to go forward. So Gordon Duff, the Veterans Today guy, finally told me what happened. He said they used a combination of – the Israelis used petroleum jelly, DMSO, and Datura. I said, what is Datura? He said, look it up. And I did. It's an extract from Jimson weed. It's very deadly. So he said, they're lucky they didn't use dandelion extract. But he said they do that too. Anyway, that's my sad story.
Yeah, and of course DMSO is used because that's something that when put in contact with the skin pretty much opens up the pores and lets the poison in much greater amounts. And so
into the bloodstream,
This doesn't surprise me at all. And the biological weapons, those are the main ones we have to watch out for, because those are much more surreptitious, and especially when they put them in a needle and call them vaccines. And yes, in fact, this is what's going on every day. And that's why people must wake up to this, because basically our entire government is occupied by Zionists right now. That should be obvious to everyone. As a matter of fact, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, the true reason that she was booted out of Congress was because when the entire Congress was asked to sign an alliance or an allegiance with Israel, she refused to sign that document, and that was the end of her. And so that's what people have to realize, is that all of these criminals in the District of Criminals have agreed to align with Israel, and sometimes it's totally obvious by what they say. Of course, it came out just a week or two ago that Mitt Romney has been friends with Netanyahu for 30 years. So I think we got a problem.
Yeah, I think the Republicans are much more dangerous than the Democrats. The Democrats, you know, they're a little bit more open. They can criticize Israel from time to time, but the Republicans are unable to criticize Israel whatsoever or resist
right.
them.
Then look at what Obama's done with his executive orders.
Yeah. I've lost you.
No, I was just saying, look at what Obama's done with his executive orders. This National Defense Authorization Act. I think they're all aligned with the Zionists.
Yeah, I suppose his antipathy towards Netanyahu is kind of theater, because he'll do what he's told to do.
Well, and they posture. You know, excuse me, they're all attorneys, you know. It's like a theater for them. And so one of my favorite things was when Nancy Pelosi made this statement, well, we have to, you know, enact Obamacare in order to find out what's in the bill. I mean, what do people need to hear to let them know they're not the ones writing the legislation? They've got their people in the back room. Various, you know, types, especially the Zionists and the corporate people and all the rest. They're the ones that are writing this stuff.
Yeah, I noticed that today the activist Post, Madison Rupert, is writing that the U.S. officials are shifting their focus from Al-Qaeda to homegrown extremists. So it's about time. I mean, you know, we deserve a bit more attention than this imaginary CIA group.
I mean, yeah, I know. Panetta made some statement recently. I saw it on mainstream media, which I monitor just to see what they're feeding the sheep. He said there's no silver bullet for Al-Qaeda. And, of course, that's true because, as you said, it's a CIA creation to begin with. But, yes, they certainly realize that people are waking up and that they're not going to take this for much longer. And as people wake up, eventually they're going to realize that, you know, there is no solution but to vaporize the problem.
Well, I hope I can take my rightful place as the chief homegrown extremist in this country.
I'm sure you're contributing to that on the show today.
I'm doing everything I can.
Yes. And what's really sad to me is, as you were saying, when you were talking to those people before and bringing up things that Bush had done and all the dead bodies that are, you know, caused by his actions, and yet they still warned you to stay away from him. And what are they telling you? It's okay. You know, we work for the man. Doesn't matter what he does. He can kill as many people as he wants. Just don't come near him, because then we'll have to kill you.
We're just doing our jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had a very funny experience a few months ago. When I see police or a state trooper, you know, they're flashing lights in my back mirror, you know, basically I look upon them as predators. I'm not afraid to go into any community. It's when the police are stopping you. That's when you know you're in trouble. And what was my crime? I had come out of the road that I live on. I was in a hurry. I was going to an appointment, and I was late. And I hadn't put on my seatbelt yet. And so this predator saw that I didn't have a seatbelt, and he pulled me over. My license plate is no to vax. That's my license plate. And I have a couple bumper stickers on my car about vaccines being weapons of mass destruction. So as the state police guy comes up to my car and he's, you know, giving me a ticket for failure to wear a seatbelt, you know, a very serious crime here in the United States, which, you know, I hadn't just put it on yet. I was just pulling out of my road. But anyways, he starts asking me about vaccine. And he tells me that his wife is a nurse, and she has severe questions about the flu vaccine and blah, blah, blah. I ended up talking to this cop for 15 minutes at least. I have all kinds of handouts in my car. I also gave him a book entitled Vaccinations, Silent Killers. I gave him a whole bunch of stuff. And he's leaving. He told me, I hope you realize I was just doing my job. And my answer to him is, that's what Heinrich Himmler said. So, in other words, I gave him the benefit of my time, even though I ended up even more late for my appointment from talking to him, and gave him all this information to protect him and his wife from getting assaulted with vaccines. He didn't rip the ticket up. He just said, yeah, I'm just doing my job. And this is the mentality that we're dealing with.
Yeah, he'll keep doing his job when he's ordered to put you in a pen, you know, in a gulag someplace. He'll keep doing his job. So
exactly.
They're no damn good. These guys are no damn good. I don't have any sympathy for cops or anybody that is just doing his job. Not good. Not good enough.
Well, not only that, but here in North Carolina, there's been quite an uproar over the last few months. There's been at least three police officers. And it's always amazing when these stories even come out. But there's been at least three police officers that have been found guilty of pulling women over and then sexually assaulting them. And then telling them, you know, if you, you know, basically, you know, make a complaint about what I've done, you know, you'll have a problem type thing. I mean, that's why I look upon them as predators. And that's because, actually, they're making the military psychopathic. They're turning them into killers. You know, they're coming home and they're killing their own families. They're doing this through vaccines and drugs like the medication for malaria that actually has a side effect of psychotic behavior and things of that nature. And then these are the people that are coming home and joining the police force. So this latest, I think it was 800,000 soldiers that they sent home from Iraq. When I heard about that, I said, we're going to have a problem because these people are going to mostly be going into the police force, and they're going to be doing the same thing to the Americans that they were doing to the Iraq people.
Yeah, there's no rule of law in this country. We're under the law of the gun, and these cops are just another gang. They're highly, you know, heavily armed gang, so we have to deal with them as such. They have no compunction about hurting us, tasing us, gassing us, shooting us, whatever. I mean, they don't care, and they'll be rewarded for it. So we have to deal with that. We have to defend ourselves from this gang.
Exactly. I mean, if you go on YouTube and just type in, you know, police violence or something of that nature, you could spend days watching different videos. There's one video up there of, I think it was an 84-year-old grandmother that was pulled over by the police. And she, you know, gave them a little bit of flack because she knew she'd done nothing wrong and started to, you know, protest what they were doing to her. They tased that woman. There are so many people that they've killed with tasers. I mean, it depends on where the taser hits you, but if it goes into your cardiac area, you're dead. It's going to cause an arrhythmia. And never, ever have I heard of any cop being prosecuted for murder for killing somebody with tasers, with guns, whatever. They always get, you know, the get-out-of-jail-free card, and I'm sure on the side they're actually patted on the back.
Well, you're exactly right, and there's only one way to deal with this, you know, called self-defense. And I don't I don't view cops as any different than criminals in this day and age. They're pretty much the same thing now.
Exactly. You had mentioned that Veterans Today site. I've accessed that many times. It seems to be pretty legit. I wanted to ask you about that. They do expose a lot of things that are going on. Do you think that's another disinfo site, you know, 90% truth, 10% lies, or do you think that they're pretty much good guys?
Gordon Duff asked me to write for them, and I did for a few months. But, he was the first to say that there are a lot of Jews on Veterans Today. And my material was kind of an antidote to all that stuff. Eventually, though, I couldn't operate under any kind of, editorial control. So I had to go independent. And I told him that. I said, you're going to be tarred with my brush because I'm going to be saying some pretty radical stuff, and I don't think it belongs on Veterans Today.
Wait a minute. If he knows that the Zionists are the problem and he's in control of Veterans Today, why is he allowing the Jews to have this control?
Well, Gordon comes from the CIA, and he's got CIA friends and Mossad associates, and I just became uncomfortable with this element. Operate under any kind of editorial control, so I had to go independent. And I told him that. I said, you're going to be tarred with my brush because I'm going to be saying some pretty radical stuff, and I don't think it belongs on Veterans Today.
Wait a minute. If he knows that the Zionists are the problem... Now we're getting some ridiculous feedback, but I'm going to just keep going. No, I would say... that he's allowing himself to be tarred with a Zionist brush.
He comes from the CIA, and he's got CIA friends and Mossad associates, and I just became uncomfortable with this element. I couldn't operate under any kind of editorial control, so I had to go independent. And I told him that. I said, you're going to be tarred with my brush because I'm going to be saying some pretty radical stuff, and I don't think it belongs on Veterans Today.
We're getting all kinds of weird feedback now, so we're almost out of time anyways. Hopefully this will come out over the air. I just want to refer everybody to go to Bruce's blog, jbcampbellextremismonline.com. Read his essays. You will learn a lot from reading his essays. And check out the archives to hear my show with his wife, Robbie, from a couple weeks ago. And definitely keep in touch, you and Robbie both. And I thank you for everything you're doing. And I do feel very strongly that things are going to turn around because people are waking up. But there's no question it's going to get really ugly for some time before that happens.
Okay, well, thank you for having me on.
Okay, thank you, and give my regards to Robbie. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Put the needle on the record, put the needle on the record, put the needle on the record when the drum beats go like this.
The only way that a human being can get a bird flu or a swine flu is if it is injected in them.
So how did we get swine flu then?
It's been made in a factory and injected.
I put the needle to the record because the needle is defective. And the needle breaks the record when the needle is defective. For prevention of the fever, bringing death to the receiver. There's no effort in believing that the method feeds the fever. See the leader. Diseases are invented in the lab. One believes it on reading recent mentions of the jab. Centered in a grand scab of corruption and lies. And taking views and dooms and news rumors to the public eye. But now the floor has risen on the cause of autism. Doctors show research and scores applause with them. It's mercury and vaccines. Often there's more given. Peace ignored and forbidden, cause profit is war driven. A score billion,
on vaccines alone, and the government don't care. They're always taxing the clones, and the CDC is right behind this rolling car. Part involved from the start, and this evolving art. Big pharma, big deception, Obama, big karma. Enter wise, Roach Dyer, and vex the healthcare. All the sorted history with stacks of health scares. You got HIV and birth flu mixed up in the shops. I've been connecting the dots between the money that's lost. Conspiracy? Yeah, I sense a couple of plots.
If you never want to get the swine flu, don't go get the swine flu vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine. And if the doctor says that they can take it himself, just say no. Say no to the vaccine. There is one little word that could save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine. And if Obama says that they can take it himself, just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
I don't need your prescription, I ain't got no reflection. Corporate pharmaceuticals, you need a politician. Put them on prescription, that should be our own decision. Whether we were spending on vaccines or health and education. Soon they enlist the general populace. They adding to the list, pharmaceutical benefits. Yo, Alexa Finland, Glasgow Smith Klein. Pop the mic and fine, still ain't seen your disease. Mac, I cough and let us whine. Your population linked with holding vaccines. Rather let a product lapse and save some human beings. Now death is the kind of living, so they want to hear us when we're running on the machine. Yeah. Another flu, yo, that ain't our biggest threat. What about an aging population with no safety net? So we continue to believe everything we read. They're just a human case in their new speed.
Weapons of trial and error, we're smiling in terror at the doctor and nurse. Take a hold of yourself and control of your health and say no.
No, why don't you go first?
One little word that can save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
The doctor says make him take it himself.
Say no to the vaccine. One little word that can save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine. If Obama says make him take it himself, just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
Don't get any injections. You never know what's in them. They're all poison. And there's no record that they ever prevent anything.
The vaccine manufacturers need approximately 8 to 9 months to produce the amount of vaccine that's going to be required for immunizing the at-risk populations. And so we have to make our recommendations almost a year in advance.
Tja, you need to stand up for your rights.
So where was I? Conspiracies, secret ops and spy stations, and the catch word of the year, depopulation. But humans generally are hard to kill, even with the jar of pills. That's why the politicians have to pass the bills for compulsory Gardasil. From Malta to Dagobah and Fardasil, another bill protects this evil Gardasil. Make a murder from liability for illness or death that may occur. Cause infertility and cancer are hidden inside the brick, and immune disorders have you get ridden, retired and sick. Research is your friend, knowledge keeping is king. Every vaccine has a poison dollar deep in a sting. There's no master flu, they're just after me and you. The last dance of June, now they mask a see-through stars with a cheap sweet through swine flu. A scam too, it's like to make a trillion bucks on out-of-date Tamiflu. Manufactured viruses, biological warfare, psychological torture, gel or jet, also more prayers. Our bodies are designed to fight those bugs intruding, but only when our diet is right, so don't shove your food in.
In 1976, it was thought we were on the brink of another major flu outbreak. Medical science appeared to be prepared. The experts planned to use their best weapon yet, prevention with the flu vaccine. 500 soldiers in Fort Dix, New Jersey, came down with the flu in February of 1976. Private David Lewis died, and it was determined that he had suffered from swine flu. At the time, it was feared that approximately 500 other soldiers on the base were ill with the same strain of influenza, and the alarm was sounded. In March 76, President Gerald Ford announced the biggest immunization program in history.
This virus was the cause of a pandemic in 1918 and 1919 that resulted in over 500,000 deaths in the United States.
Ford's intention was to vaccinate every man, woman, and child in the United States. vaccine was rushed into production and imported in great quantities. The cost was to be about $135 million. And the first batch of vaccine was delivered on November 1st. The first public swine flu clinic opened 3 weeks later. From the beginning, the program was criticized for being hastily implemented and unnecessary. But over 50 million people in North America were inoculated at a cost of $100 million before investigators discovered an apparent increase in a rare paralytic disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome among the recently vaccinated. This and the fact that the epidemic failed to materialize led to a quick end to the vaccination program in December 1976.
Researchers and experts now fear that the failure of the swine flu epidemic to materialize in 76 will have detrimental effects on preparations for future pandemics. Dr. Arthur Silverstein was an advisor to the U.S. Senate Health Committee in 1976 and has written a book about the swine flu scare. Dr. Silverstein, you called your book about the experiences of 76 pure politics, impure science. Why is that the right image for those experiences?
I think it's the right image because whereas one still does, didn't then and still doesn't know all that much about the science of influenza virus, one knows a fair amount about how politics works in Washington. And politics worked very smoothly, although the science...